Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are on a listen-and-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to your first speaker, Ms. Tracy Fortson. Ma'am, you may begin.
Hi, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for tonight's Coffee House Conversation. Tonight's subject is exciting, and we hope that you will enjoy it and learn a little something and be inspired to get involved and become your own best advocate. So we're going to start today by outlining what our objectives are for the call. And we're going to start with defining what advocacy is, what it means, and what your role is. We're also going to provide you with some empowering tips to help you to learn to speak out, ask questions, raise issues with your healthcare team, family members, your community, leaders, and just in everyday conversation. We're going to talk to you about the impact your story has on others and how important it is for you to tell your story. We're also going to discuss the public policy process. It can be very complicated for many of us to understand how laws are made, so we're going to go through that process and break it down for you step by step, and then we're going to give you more tips and information about how you can communicate with your members of Congress through our electronic advocacy network. So with that, I'll get started by talking about raising some basic statistics about CKD donation and transplantation. And many of you know the statistic. You know that 26 million Americans, which would be 1 in 8 adults, have kidney disease. And unfortunately, most people do not know that they have it. And we also know that there are at least another 20 million people out there at risk. So there are a lot of people with chronic kidney disease that don't know that they have it, and we want to spread the word. Many of you also may know that more than 70,000 Americans die from causes related to kidney failure each year. That's a lot of people. 475,000 people have end-stage kidney disease and must have dialysis or a transplant to survive. We know that approximately more than 76,000 patients are waiting for kidney transplants, and more than 2,300 are waiting for kidney pancreas transplants. And that list continues to increase. Those numbers are going up. A new name is added to the waiting list every 12 minutes in this country, and 18 people die while waiting each day. So we all know that more donors are urgently needed. So that just kind of lines up or gives you the statistics about the issues and the problems that we're facing. And with those problems, we know that there are people who can help us. We know that the U.S. Congress and local and state law officials can help. We know that government agencies play a role. We know that the media can get the word out, and they also have a role to play in addressing some of these issues. We also work with health and community and civic organizations, whether it's a religious organization or your church. We all have a role to play in getting the word out and looking at ways to address these really critical problems. But the most important person who can really help to solve these problems is, believe it or not, you, people like you. And the reason you're so critical and key to addressing these issues is that you know firsthand the struggles of living with kidney disease. You live with it every day. You know what you face every single day. Many of you know the frustration of waiting for a transplant. You know how that process can be lengthy. You understand there's a lot of red tape and it can be difficult to maneuver. Many of you know the difficulties living donors and potential donors face when you want to provide a donate a kidney. There's a lot of issues that you face that you may not have considered, or there are things that should be addressed that would keep you from donating if the system was better equipped. And many of you have great ideas about how to make the systems better. We hear from you all the time, and we welcome your input. In fact, your input is one of the most important ways that we evaluate our programs, and we design programs and resources to help you because you tell us what you need. So I say all those things to say that really it's you that can make a difference for yourself and for so many others. So we're hoping that through the National Kidney Foundation's People Like Us initiative, we're hoping to empower you to become strong and proactive for kidney disease, donation, and transplantation. We're hoping to educate you so that you can make the right decisions for yourself and your family and work with your healthcare team to so that you'll feel comfortable talking to them about your various treatment options and things to consider. We also want to encourage you to participate in the public policy process, and we show you how to do that with some really simple systems that we have in place. We also want you to engage with the media because you are showing them the faces of chronic kidney disease, donation, and transplantation. We work for the National Kidney Foundation, and while we all enjoy our work here, if we don't have the personal story, that's what the media is interested in. They want to hear from people like you who are directly affected and impacted every day. And we also hope to energize you to get involved in your local activities and working in your community, whether that's volunteering to work on programs to raise awareness or to screen for chronic kidney disease or work on programs to increase donations. So what is advocacy? A lot of people think that it's a really fancy word, and all it means is active support. It means that we're all advocates on something in some way every day of our lives. Anything that you talk about, anything you're concerned about, every one of us has the potential to be a strong advocate. One of the biggest challenges for people who are considering becoming more active and becoming an advocate is we're scared. And we know that advocacy takes courage. Being an advocate can be difficult. We know that you're stepping outside your comfort zone to raise your voice for a cause. You may feel nervous or doubt if you can make a difference, but believe me, we know that you can, and we hear it time and time again. And at this point, I'm going to turn over the conversation and introduce our first guest panelist, who knows all about being courageous and stepping out to raise her voice. Her name is Rose DeCristo. Rose is one of our longtime loved volunteers who has worked tirelessly to raise awareness about kidney disease, donation, and transplantation by sharing her personal story with her community, with family members, with the media, and lawmakers. Rose became a donor wife in 1996 when her first husband, Tony, died suddenly of an undetected brain tumor. Rose began volunteering for her local OPO a few years later, sharing her story and providing support to newly bereaved donor families. And she joined the volunteer editorial board of the National Kidney Foundation's For Those Who Give and Grieve newsletter, and she also joined the executive committee. In 2005, her family was again touched by organ donation. After a seven-year wait, a family member received a kidney from a deceased donor. Rose currently serves as a member and a past chair of the NDFC, which is the National Donor Family Council Executive Committee, and she continues to serve on the For Those Who Give and Grieve newsletter. She's the volunteer editor-in-chief. And in her everyday life, Rose works in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis as a freelance writer. So with that, I'll turn the phones over to Rose, who can talk to you firsthand about what it feels or what it means to be an advocate. Rose?
Thank you, Tracy. You're so kind. I'm Rose DeCristo from St. Paul, Minnesota, and as Tracy told you, in September of 1996, my husband Tony and I had just celebrated our five-year wedding anniversary, and like most young couples, we had dreams of buying a house, starting a family, and celebrating many more wonderful anniversaries. But all those dreams ended in a day when Tony died suddenly and shockingly of an undetected brain tumor. He was only 35. Because he was young and healthy and he was able to be an organ and tissue donor and help save other people's lives. And in the following months, I thought a lot about his recipients, hoping they were doing well, hoping they were able to be home with their families for Thanksgiving and Christmas. When I finally heard from a few of the recipients, it just meant the world to me. One recipient who received a kidney was a farmer who'd been on dialysis for 3 years. Because of the hours he spent in dialysis and he had to drive over 2 hours each time he went to the center, he said that getting my husband's gift of a kidney had given him his life back again, and he could enjoy spending time on his farm and with the animals again. My family learned a lot more about dialysis a few years later when my brother's girlfriend was diagnosed with end-stage renal disease. And after 7 long years on dialysis, she received a kidney transplant because another family, like me, at a hospital somewhere made the decision to donate their loved one's organs. And it felt like the gift had come full circle for me and for my family. And I first became involved with the National Kidney Foundation because I wanted to help provide support to other donor families. Over time, I saw how intricately connected we are, donor families, transplant recipients, and kidney patients. Issues like immunosuppressant drugs matter to me because it impacts people like Tony's recipients. So I feel passionate about it. And as an advocate, I talk to people whenever I have an opportunity, at work, sitting next to someone on a plane. It's surprising how easily it flows into conversation. I think that's because advocacy isn't something I do so much as it's something that I live. I like sharing my story with others because I believe it gives people hope. By putting a face to organ donation, it makes it real. It gives people a chance to ask questions that I can answer from firsthand experience. Believe me, when episodes of Boston Legal or Grey's Anatomy deal with organ donation, coworkers ask me all kinds of interesting questions. Telling our stories can be powerful. We may never know the impact that it has on those we share it with. Or we might see it in a way that's humbling. A few weeks ago, my uncle was brought to the hospital after suddenly collapsing. It was a brain aneurysm. And because my experience with donation made such an impression on him, he had told his family that if anything ever happened, he wanted to be a donor like Tony. Today, there are at least 3 people alive because of his gift of organs, and others are able to see because of the gift of corneas. But if you're on this call, you have a story to share. Whether you're a donor, family member, a recipient, a patient, or a professional, your life has been touched by donation, transplantation, or kidney disease, and you can make a difference.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Rose. I wanted to add, too, that, Rose, before you started speaking out about this, that you had no formal training, and this just became something that was just part of your everyday conversation, and you reached out to us and asked how you could help, and we will forever be grateful for your help and guidance. So thank you very much. So as you heard from Rose, who is just one of thousands of people like us advocates across the country, what do advocates do? Well, really simply, you speak up. You tell your story. You share your experiences and opinions with the media, with the general public, with the community, with lawmakers. But you can start off really small. Start with your family and friends and your coworkers. Just everyday conversations. As Rose said, you never know what impact your story may have on someone else, or how someone else can connect to that story and say, wow, somebody in my family had kidney disease, or someone I know was waiting for a transplant. It may also encourage people to get screened and go to their doctors and ask the right questions to be sure that to see if they're at risk for chronic kidney disease. The other thing advocates do in addition to speaking up is they get involved. Advocates volunteer for events to raise awareness, like our U.S. Transplant Games. The National Kidney Foundation also does kidney walks. We do golf outings. We do free screenings in the community. So there are various ways that you can work, you can carry out activities to make you a strong advocate. Everything does not require that you speak to a lawmaker or you don't have to talk to the media. There are so many different opportunities for you to get involved in advocacy. So there's something for everyone. So the National Kidney Foundation's People Like Us, really quickly, we are the largest and most influential group of advocates with kidney disease, transplant recipients and candidates, living donors, donor families, caregivers, and loved ones. There are thousands of us across this country, and we're making our voices heard every day, whether we're talking to our healthcare team, or we're talking to elected officials, or we're just sharing information with each other so that our experiences can help not only empower ourselves, but other people who are facing situations that we've already been through. So People Like Us is made up of various constituent councils within the National Kidney Foundation. Many of you may have heard of these organizations. We have the Patient and Family Council, which serves people with chronic kidney disease, people on dialysis, and family members. We have the National Donor Family Council, which Rose is a part of, which serves donor families who gave the gift of life. We have the Transaction Council, which is for transplant recipients and those waiting for a transplant. And we have, coming soon, we will be launching a Living Donor Council, and that's to help support and provide education to living and potential donors. And before you say slow down, I didn't get a chance to write all that down. Links to all of these groups are, you can find at our website, which I will continue to mention throughout the call. The website is www.nkfpeoplelikeus.org. So you can find information about all the constituent councils I just mentioned. And feel free to join, and membership for all of our councils is free. So we talked about, we've outlined what advocacy is. So let's talk a little bit about some of the characteristics of an advocate. Well, really, there's just a few simple things. There's no magic to it, but one of the most important things is that you're committed to the cause. You are committed to be involved and to speak out. It's, of course, important that you are able to communicate and build relationships with people, which we do this all the time in everyday conversations, whether you're riding next to someone on the bus or you're talking to someone in a book club. We all talk every day with people, and we want to continue to build those relationships so they understand what it means, what chronic kidney disease is, and what it means to need a transplant. Some of the other characteristics of effective advocates are the ability to be persuasive, your persistence, and your patience. And I know that all of us at different times have had to rely on one or another of these characteristics to either get something done or to make friends or influence people. So we all know that we have to use a little bit of patience and persistence and persuasiveness, and we have to be flexible because we know that things don't always happen overnight and that we may have to change courses. So we know, and especially living with chronic kidney disease, we know that sometimes we need to be flexible. Everything isn't set in stone. So some of the questions you should ask in terms of, are you really advocating for yourself? You could ask yourself things like, are you obtaining the care you need? Are you communicating effectively with your healthcare team, your employers, or your family? Are you able to be assertive and obtain positive results? Do you have a support network? Are you able to ask for and accept help? And how are you coping? Have you found effective and healthy ways to reduce stress and bring joy into your life? These are just some of the things that you should be thinking about in terms of advocating for yourself and answering those questions. So some of the other things you can do to advocate for yourself is to learn about your disease. Ask for written information whenever possible. Learn about all your possible treatments and ask if you've been told about all the available options. Be sure to organize your health information, keep a record of conversations with names and phone numbers of people you talk to, and feel free to write down important words and definitions. Write down questions and answers and take notes. Don't rely on your memory. We all forget things. And definitely seek help from family and friends that you trust. Other things you can do is ask for a second and third opinion. As it is, you are hiring a medical team to take care of you. So it is well within your right to ask these questions. Know your insurance benefits and talk to others who have been in similar situations. These and other tips on how to be your own best advocate are available on the Coffee House Conversations website as well as on the National Kidney, the NKFPeopleLikeUs.org website. There are all sorts of lists that outline these things that I just mentioned in addition to your rights and responsibilities. The National Kidney Foundation has put together rights and responsibilities for transplant recipients and for people on dialysis, and those documents can also be found on our website. Believe it or not, you've taken your first step to being an advocate just by being on this call today. This is your first step to empowering yourself and educating yourself. But we also do coffee house conversations in the community. You can take part in live support groups where you can learn to connect and share with other people, and you can work with some of the local NKF offices. And at this time, I'm going to take a break to talk to, now that we've talked about talking to ourselves, talking to our family members, talking to our healthcare team, now is a good time to break to introduce to you Jane Mardock, who is the National Kidney Foundation's Congressional Relations Director. And Jane is going to give you information and tips about communicating with your elected officials about issues related to chronic kidney disease, donation, and transplantation. Jane has worked with the NKF for over 3 years, and she's in charge of communicating with Congress. And she also facilitates communication between NKF constituents and people like you with their elected officials. Jane is a seasoned nonprofit legislative advocacy professional, and she has worked in the field for over 20 years. So with that, Jane, I'm going to turn the call to you.
Okay, thanks, Tracy. I'm going to start off by giving everyone just a little bit of, you know, Civics 101, which you may have forgotten. But there are 435 members of the House of Representatives and 100 senators. And every representative is up for election every 2 years, and senators are up every 6 years. Every one of you has a member of Congress, or sometimes called a member of the House of Representatives, or a congressperson. And you also have two senators. And each of you live in a congressional district, which is defined every 10 years after the census. And that congressional district, there are about 600,000 people who live in that district. Now, I give you all of this just so that you know you're a constituent and you're a voter, which means that all of these members of Congress work for you. And you are probably the most powerful lobbyist, because you hold the power over whether they are returned to office or not, whether they get to keep their job. So legislators respond to you, and what they respond most to is personal stories and personal connections. Almost every leader on kidney issues has a personal family connection or a friend connection, or they've become aware of the issue because of a constituent connection. Kidney issues tend to be fairly bipartisan and really not all that controversial in comparison to some of the other issues I've worked on. They are issues that a lot of people have no idea what their kidneys do or how kidney disease really works. And so the way that they become passionate about these issues is from personal stories or personal experience. So that's really our role, is to help them understand the challenges and the opportunities to make things better through legislation. Another thing that I want to remind you is that legislation takes time. You need to build a critical mass that allows you to make people care about your issue. Or there needs to be a crisis that calls for attention, immediate change on the issues. The other thing is that legislation is often incremental. As much as we would like to get everything we want right now, it just doesn't work that way. You know that from your own personal lives as well. You rarely get everything you want the first time you ask for it, but you have to keep chipping away and making progress over time. And that is definitely what has happened with the National Kidney Foundation over the last 35 years, that we have had a benefit for end-stage renal disease through Medicare. You know, there are incremental changes where you kind of take care of one group of a population, and then you add time on another end. And over the course of time, you cover more people and make things better for a lot more people as well. In terms of the National Kidney Foundation's public policy agenda, we have a range of issues that we work on that include chronic kidney disease, dialysis, and organ transplant issues. We also work on general health care issues of the day through broader coalitions. We had a major victory in 2008 on dialysis reforms that were in the Medicare bill that was signed into law in July. One of the things that was included in that legislation was pre-dialysis education classes, which was a top priority for the National Kidney Foundation for over 10 years. 2009 and 2010, we'll be focusing on early detection and transplant issues mostly, because a lot of the dialysis issues that we worked, that we had been focusing on, were addressed in last year's legislation. When it comes to early detection, one of the things that we are most interested in is expanding a program that was started several years ago at the Centers for Disease Control. The CDC program focuses on, it targets at-risk populations for screening. There are currently pilots that are going on in 4 states, but we would like to see this program expanded. We will be calling on you to help us expand this program, because as you know, most people who have kidney disease have no idea, because a lot of the early signs of kidney disease, really, there aren't a lot of early signs. And so most people who have kidney disease don't even know that they have it. The CDC program focuses on people of color. It focuses on people who have diabetes, heart disease, and who are over the age of 50 in terms of screening. It also includes a component where there will be educational materials and seminars and such for primary care doctors, because the earlier stages of kidney disease can be treated by a primary care team if they are aware and if they are proactive. One of the bigger issues that we're going to be working on surrounds a campaign that the National Kidney Foundation has recently rolled out. It's called End the Wait. And there are a number of legislative proposals in this End the Wait campaign that are focused on eliminating the transplant waiting list over the next 10 years. Some of these are regulatory. Some of them are local changes or things that would need to happen in hospitals. But some of them will require legislative changes. And we will be engaging people to try to make some of these legislative changes. There are 3 areas that that are probably most likely to be on the horizon this year that we'll be calling on your help for. One of them, the main one, is to extend coverage for immunosuppressive drugs. Currently, if you have a Medicare-eligible transplant, you would have access to Medicare and therefore immunosuppressive drugs for the first 36 months after your transplant if you are not aged or disabled. This is one of those issues where it's an incremental change, because it used to be that no matter, even if you already were on Medicare because of your age or disability status, you only had coverage for immunosuppressive drugs for 36 months. That was extended several years ago, so now if you are on Medicare, you have these, you have access to these medications for the life of your transplant. But what the population that is left is the group of people who are younger and who are no longer disabled because they're able to get back to work after they have a transplant. What this legislation would do is, if private coverage is not available, we want to make immunosuppressive drugs available through Part B of Medicare for the life of the transplant. It makes Medicare basically the payer of last resort, but it is our concern. We don't want anybody to lose a transplant because they can't afford the medication to maintain it. This won't solve every person's problem that is under 65 or not disabled, but it will help a lot of people, and so we want to work on this legislation this year. Another piece of legislation that's already been introduced is a tax credit for up to $5,000 for unreimbursed expenses, which include lost wages associated with living donation. This is a piece of legislation that has been introduced several years in a row, and we would like to see this become law as well. And a third piece of legislation that I'd like to highlight tonight has to do with worker protection. We would like to expand the definition under the Family Medical Leave Act so that taking time off for a living donation protects your job. Of course, this would be unpaid leave, but it would be job protection and remove one of the barriers that people face when they are considering living donations. In addition to passing legislation, another thing that we may be engaging people like us in helping us is implementing a piece of legislation. Just because you pass a law doesn't mean that it ever gets enacted. You have to be vigilant to make sure that it actually, that what passes, what has passed, actually comes into fruition, and also that this legislation, is the best that it can be. For instance, this legislation that passed last year that provides up to 6 classes before you start dialysis, we want to make sure that patients are able to weigh in with the center the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services to make sure that these programs actually meet patient needs. So we may be asking you to contact CMS instead of Congress. But these are the kinds of things that we do through this. So I wanted to give you also a little bit of a call to action as we move forward. Elected officials want to hear from you, but they're also more likely to listen to you if you communicate at the right time and you share a compelling reason for them to take action. NKS can be your eyes and ears on legislation. We know when members of Congress are most likely to listen, and this is often when legislation is introduced or it's being discussed in hearings or other times. The way that you can find out about this is to join the Take Action Network. Michelle is going to be talking about this in a few minutes, but what happens is that you sign up on our website, and we will send you an action alert with some background information and a sample letter. And that letter will go directly to your congressman or your senator based on what we're asking you to do. March is National Kidney Month, and March 12th is World Kidney Day. And on that day, we will be having about 75 advocates in Washington, D.C., that will be meeting with members of Congress. And we're going to be asking you to join in a virtual fly-in with Congress so that you can talk about the same issues that they will be talking about. One of the issues that we're going to be asking you to do is to contact your senators to support legislation to extend the coverage for immunosuppressive drugs. We'll write the letter, but it's always better if you add your personal connection with the issue, and we hope that you will be doing that. So I think with that, we're ready for Michelle.
Thank you, Jane, so much for that information. And for everyone, I know it was a lot to take in, but 2 things to remember. The call is being recorded so that we can go back and listen in. That we are here. If you have any questions, you can call us at 1-800-622-9010. We'll be able to guide you through the process. And also, again, we will be mentioning at the end of the call all of the different websites that you can go to get information, whether it's on contacting your members of Congress, whether it's tips for talking to your healthcare team, and all that kind of information. So with that, I'm going to introduce our third and final panelist for tonight, and she is Michelle Rodriguez. Michelle has been with the National Kidney Foundation since July 2007. And Michelle has worked, her role is to expand the National Kidney Foundation's public policy advocacy program, by linking advocates to policymakers, advocates being you and the policymakers being the people we're trying to influence. And before joining the National Kidney Foundation, Michelle has a firsthand knowledge of how all of this works because she works for a member of Congress. She works for Representative Sam Farr, who's a Democrat in California. And prior to working for Representative Farr, Michelle spent several years in the education field. So Michelle is going to talk to us about, Jane told us what we're going to be talking about to Congress, and now Michelle will tell us how we'll talk to Congress about it. So, Michelle?
Thank you, Tracy. Jane just spoke to you about the National Kidney Foundation's legislative priorities, and you've also heard from Rose, who had an amazing experience as an advocate. So I would like to continue the conversation and discuss the NKF legislative priorities and introduce you to ways that you can be involved as an advocate through public policy. Rose continues to be involved and participate in our advocacy programs, so you might have some questions for her about being involved as an advocate in public policy after I discuss different opportunities for involvement. Elected officials have their job because of you, constituents who voted them into office. As a constituent, you are powerful and critical because elected officials turn to you for continued support. Additionally, you are powerful and critical because you have an expertise and experiences to convey. So policymakers want to hear from you, a real person with real experiences and real issues. Your requests and needs are important to each policymaker. The National Kidney Foundation provides a platform for public policy advocacy by connecting you to members of Congress through our People Like Us Take Action Network. The People Like Us Take Action Network is an online advocacy tool which anyone can join, a patient, a family member, friends, professionals. Anyone can join this and continue to receive information about legislation and the NKF legislative priorities. So the first thing to do is you register to receive action alerts and get information about current legislation and policies regarding chronic kidney disease, transplantation, and donation. So to register, you need to go to, you can go to the National Kidney Foundation's website, kidney.org/take action. You can also go there to look at the legislation that we are working on right now or see past action alerts that we've sent and take action on those as well. So after you register to become a public policy advocate through our People Like Us Take Action Network, about once a month we will send you an action alert asking you to connect to your members of Congress about a specific issue. We feel strongly that our advocates have powerful messages, so we encourage each and every one of you to write in a personal message and to tell your story every time you send a message to members of Congress. Not only will we provide background information and bill text, but once you register, all action alerts will be sent automatically to your members of Congress. There's an automatic connection, so we help take care of that and connect and send those messages right to your member of Congress, so the right person gets the right message from the right constituent. Each action alert will include an introduction to the issue and links for more information, sometimes outside information or external websites, so you can gather all the information you want to. We'll have a sample letter. We'll provide a sample letter, again, and it's, you're able to make changes to that sample letter to personalize it, and the ability to customize all letters based on the bill sponsor and committee or caucus member. So if we are asking a member of Congress to support a bill and they've already supported it in the past, we have the ability to, in our personalized letters, we have the ability to say, thank you for supporting this in the past, or we would like to see you support this in the future. It's very sophisticated computer stuff that I can't explain, but it does it. So we'll also send a sample action alerts that we've sent in the past. Jane's talked about our legislative priorities, but sample action alerts are extending immunosuppressive drug coverage, creating pre-dialysis education benefits, living donor assistance programs. So all action alerts will be based on our legislative priorities. And like Jane said, legislation is a long process, so sometimes you might receive a few action alerts based on immunosuppressive drug coverage because the bill has moved through Congress, and so we will also explain that through our Take Action Network. The People Like Us Take Action Network provides a platform for you to be informed, influenced, and have a voice in the legislative process. We've discovered a few best practices to communicate with Congress. In 2004, members of Congress received about 182 million emails, 18 million letters. Since 2004, that number has only multiplied over several times. So it's important that we focus on quality, not just quantity. That's why I say over and over, and Jane has said over and over, and Tracy has said over and over, that your story is important. It's important to tell your story and have members know know the face of chronic kidney disease. And it's important for them to relate the legislative issue to a real person with a real issue. And additionally, it's important that you add your story because when surveyed, about 75% of legislative staff members questioned whether or not a form letter was just sent, generated by a computer, or was actually sent by somebody. So, again, quality is important because your story says it was sent by someone real. And you represent constituents who are unable to voice their opinion or don't know about the National Kidney Foundation's People Like Us Take Action Network. And so you represent those people, and so it's important that you add your story to each of the action alerts. Lastly, an effective public policy advocacy campaign includes several types of communication. So the first is the personalized email that I just talked about. That's the first step. Another thing that you can do is make a phone call to your members of Congress. To get their contact information, it's all on our website. It's at the kidney.org/takeaction at the bottom of the page. There's a place where you can find out where your member of Congress is based on your zip code. And by clicking on that, and you can get all their contact information, their office building, their phone number. There's a wealth of information on our website for you to look at and to connect to your members of Congress. Other effective public policy campaigns our effective policy campaigns include town hall meetings. Through the People Like Us Take Action Network, we will send out town hall meeting dates and background information and encourage you to attend those meetings. Additionally, we encourage you to be involved at the local offices of the National Kidney Foundation because we turn to those offices to find great advocates for our Washington, D.C. fly-ins. So constituent visits are very, very important as well, very effective. And I encourage you to get involved locally. And lastly, members of Congress, it's great to have members of Congress visit dialysis clinics. So that will be one of our asks during World Kidney Day, is to ask them to visit a dialysis clinic. When you call, you can ask them to visit a dialysis clinic or one of our KEEP screenings, because it's important to put the face of kidney disease onto the legislation again. So I've presented several ways for you to be involved as an advocate in our public policy campaign. But the point I want you to take away from this discussion is that your voice is important. You have a real story. And the first step to be involved through our public policy campaign is by joining the People Like Us Take Action Network. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. So for those of you, just to recap, to join the Take Action Network, you will go to www.kidney.org, which is our main website, and type in the word take action. That will take you right to that part of our website where you can sign up. But in addition to our legislative advocacy activities, which Jane and Michelle just outlined for you, I wanted to recap again what being an advocate is. Not just policy related. Every time you speak out and talk for others, speak out about this issue, you can talk for others. excuse me. Whenever you speak out and talk to others about chronic kidney disease or transplantation or donation, you are being an advocate. You don't necessarily just have to talk to members of Congress, but you can talk to each other. And there are several ways through the NKF that we allow you to do this. We actually have message boards up for you to read and connect with other people. You can share your story on various parts of the National Kidney Foundation's website, whether you wanted to join Transaction or the Patient and Family Council or Living Donors or the National Donor Family Council. All of those groups can be found through our nkfpeoplelikeus.org main website. And we feel pretty cool that we are now part of Facebook. So you can connect with others through the very popular social network tool, Facebook, by just going on and doing a search for the National Kidney Foundation. There you'll read stories about other people like you, and you can post your own story. And we talked about you joining the Take Action Network. And for those of you who want to get involved locally, again, our affiliates and divisions around the country, they are so busy. They have so many activities and ways for you to get involved. You simply need to call them up. So if you wanted to find one of those organizations and see which National Kidney Foundation is near you locally, if you go to our main website and search for About Us, you will be able to contact those offices. There's a map of the country and shows you where we're located around across the U.S. We've also provided advocacy fact sheets for all of you. Whether you're a part of, you can be your own best advocate, a fact sheet for people with chronic kidney disease. We also have a fact sheet for donor families. We have a fact sheet for transplant recipients and candidates. And we also have a fact sheet for living donors and potential donors. In addition to the panelists that we had on the call tonight, we also have several other people like us advocates. One is Tom Falsey, who is a living donor in Kansas, and another People Like Us advocate is Andreas Price, who was on dialysis before receiving his transplant. And both Tom and Andreas will be available to answer any questions you may have once we open the lines up. So, in closing, I'd like to again reiterate the fact that all of us on this call tonight are advocates. We all have a role to play, and we all have a powerful story to tell. The only way that we're going to turn things around and make things better for ourselves and for others is if we speak out and get involved. So I encourage you all to do that, and I look forward to working with and hearing from many of you working together to continue to advance the National Kidney Foundation's missions to make lives better. So with that, we're going to open up the telephone lines for your questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session of today's conference. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required, so we may introduce your question. And we'll take a moment for the first question. Our first question comes from Rich Berkowitz. Your line is open.
Hello, my name is Rich Berkowitz, and I have been on dialysis for over 6 years and finally reaching close to the top of the transplant list. However, if I had not gone to home dialysis first, I don't think I would be here to get to the ultimate goal of a transplant if that's what's meant for me. I'm dismayed by the National Kidney Foundation's emphasis on transplants only, when I believe that where the effort should be on helping people who are on transplants. There's over 350,000 people on transplants, and only 16,000 people got transplants between 2007 and 2008. So if we can't keep people alive in order to get a transplant, you have to wonder how good the transplant's going to be for the masses. So my question is to any of you is, what can the NKF do to work on getting better dialysis, longer and more frequent dialysis for the people who need it so they can survive, rather than having a mortality rate in the United States of 23% per year?
Thank you, Rich, for your questions and your comments. One of the things I'd like to emphasize, and others can feel free to add information, one of the things we emphasize, you're exactly right, people should know their options and should understand all of their various treatment options. While transplantation is just one treatment option and it's a way for some people, we recognize the importance of dialysis and the proper dialysis treatments, and we encourage all of our patients to be sure to talk to their healthcare team. We want to know all of the options that are available to them, what makes the most sense for them, what's the best way, what's the best treatment for their lifestyle. And we encourage everybody to talk to their healthcare team and learn as much as possible as they can about dialysis. Home dialysis has been a very effective treatment option for many people. And unfortunately, Rich, you are one of the lucky ones because you heard about it and the option was presented to you. That's not always the case around the country, and that's one of the reasons that the National Kidney Foundation, as part of our public policy initiatives last year, we worked very hard for Congress to pass a measure within Medicare that will allow more people to learn about their treatment options before they get to dialysis. So we had that legislative initiative last year. We're very happy to say with the input and the letters and the phone calls and the visits from people like you, Rich, and others around the country, we know that the government is taking a step in the right direction by providing a benefit so that more people will understand their treatment options before they get to dialysis.
Stage four, before they actually have kidney failure. My name is Marilyn Swartz, and I work here at the National Kidney Foundation, and I just wanted to say a very brief word about Rich's comments about what is the NKF doing and involved with in related to dialysis patients. The National Kidney Foundation has published clinical practice guidelines. I don't know if any of you are familiar with these guidelines, but there is a letters. We're very fond of letters. It's KDOQI. It stands for Kidney Disease Outcomes Quality Initiative. And this is a research endeavor that has been going on since 1997. And the National Kidney Foundation has spearheaded the development of clinical practice guidelines related to many topics that impact kidney patients, people who have kidney disease, and people who are on dialysis, whether it's hemodialysis or peritoneal dialysis. So the guidelines for related to dialysis were published initially in 1997. And there was a wonderful response around the country and actually around the world. People from all around the world have embraced these guidelines, and now many of them do follow the recommendations in these guidelines. The guidelines for dialysis were updated as recently as 2006, and these guidelines are available to all clinicians on how to optimize and make sure that the dialysis therapy is optimized in people and is what they need, is adequate, so that they do feel better, do better, and have better outcomes. There are KDOQI guidelines for diabetes and chronic kidney disease, for anemia in chronic kidney disease, for hemodialysis, for peritoneal dialysis, for vascular access, for bone disease. New guidelines are actually coming out for that. We have guidelines coming out on transplantation. They will be out this year, as a matter of fact. We have guidelines on lipids, the level of lipids or fats that you should take in your diet, and we have guidelines on blood pressure management for people who have stages 1 to 4 kidney disease, and there are guidelines out on cardiovascular disease in dialysis. So there are lots of guidelines, and the National Kidney Foundation is making a tremendous effort to educate all clinicians and patients as well about the existence of these guidelines and what they need to do in order to provide evidence-based care so that outcomes can be better for people on dialysis, for people who have early stages of kidney disease, and for people who have kidney transplants. So these were just a brief word to update you on KDOQI and what NKF is doing more on the front of clinical practice.
Thank you, Marilyn, and thank you, Rich, again for your comments. And for any of this information, if you want more information, you can call us at our 1-800 number, 1-800-622-9010. If you want information about KDOQI or if you want information about various dialysis treatment options, all of this information is available on our website, www.kidney.org. So with that, we'll go to our next caller.
Our next question comes from Harvey Wells. Your line is open.
Hi, my name is Harvey Wells, and I live in Euless, Texas, and I've been on dialysis this time since January of 2006. prior to that, I had a transplant in June of 98. My wife was the donor. And prior to that, I was on peritoneal dialysis. My question pretty much goes along with what Rich's question was, is I may be a transplant for another candidate, but once you've had one or two transplants, your chance of getting a third is pretty much nil. And I just, I'm just, in listening to the conversation so much tonight, it seems to me that 90% of this focus is on kidney transplants. I, too, like Rich, am on home therapy. I spent the last part of the year traveling around the country. I've visited over 30 different dialysis centers and showing people the flexibility and freedom that NxStage has to offer. And to me, the number of people that are unaware of these different modalities, I know the laws have changed, and I know the dialysis clinics are doing their best to get the information out. But it seems that, you know, we're looking at a home therapy as something innovative and experimental, when in fact the studies are showing that home dialysis makes a patient healthier so that when they do receive that transplant, they have a better chance of survival. And I just would like to see more effort and more representation from the National Kidney Foundation focusing on the people living with this disease more so than just trying to get donors. And I mean, all these are worthy causes. There's no doubt about it. But like Rich said, if we don't get them to the transplant healthy, then sometimes we're just spinning our wheels.
Thank you, Harvey, and we appreciate your comments. And just what you're doing on this call is one of our most effective ways of getting the word out. I mean, we talk to patients all the time. We hear exactly what you're saying, and we recognize the difficulties because not everybody has the same amount of information, or not everybody even knows that these are options. Most people arrive at dialysis when their kidneys have failed, so they have not had the opportunity to really consider all the various options. And you're absolutely right. We're learning that home dialysis is the best option for many, many people around the country. And we're hearing that. And we, again, are presenting those options to in various ways throughout the community, through clinicians. And really the best way is through word of mouth, using people like you. So we appreciate you and your efforts to continue to raise awareness about this therapy.
Hey, see, this is Jane. Could I add to this?
Sure.
I also want, the home therapy piece was a big part of what we talked about in terms of why we needed the pre-dialysis education. Because most people, when they did, what we had found from talking to a lot of patients was that most people didn't even know that home therapy was an option when they started dialysis. And so one of the things that we talked about is the reason for the need to pass legislation that would create these classes is so that people could make the best choices for them based on all of the options. For instance, it didn't make sense for you to go on dialysis for 6 months if you were really interested in doing a living donation. That maybe you should skip dialysis altogether and go directly to transplantation. But you can't do that if you don't prepare. And one of the things that we talked about in the pre-dialysis, that when we were lobbying to pass legislation for pre-dialysis education, was that patients need to make the best choices for themselves, and therefore they have to have all the information available to them. As I said, a lot of the focus that we have right now on transplantation is mostly because we were very successful last year on dialysis issues, and so there isn't really an agenda this year. The community is still trying to define what we want next, and the sense is that we need to focus on other issues this year. And so, clearly, I mean, a lot of times legislation is what you want it to be, but sometimes it's what Congress wants it to be. And we are certainly working with Congressman McDermott, who has done a number of pieces of legislation in the past that would support more information and more studies and research into home dialysis. So we're doing a lot. We're doing what we can on this issue. Some of it with Congress is that they will work on what they're going to work on, and that defines part of our agenda as a defensive agenda instead of an offensive agenda.
Thank you, Jane. And also, Harvey, I wanted to add, in terms of the legislation that was passed, the National Kidney Foundation introduced one of the first pre-dialysis education programs around the country some 12, 15 years ago. And we're actually, once the legislation was passed last year, we now can move forward in our efforts to revise that program and to provide it locally. Again, we want to be able to be sure that people around the country have access to this information, and so we're putting it together in a format, and we're reviewing formats, we're reviewing the best language to use, we're reviewing the best ways to implement this educational program. So we're looking at all of these things, so be on the lookout. There will be a lot more information in the community in the coming months for people before they reach kidney failure and before there's a need for them to go on dialysis. They'll have more information for them to be able to make decisions and make choices like home dialysis. So thank you. Who's our next caller?
Our next question comes from Denise Eilers. Your line is open.
Hi. My name is Denise Eilers. I live in Davenport, Iowa.
Hi, Denise.
Hi. I'm a nurse educator, but also my husband was a home hemodialysis patient for 25 years, my late husband, unfortunately. Now, I do totally agree with the other callers about quality dialysis, longer dialysis, more frequent dialysis. And people can stay on dialysis for a long time. My husband made the choice, informed choice, to stay on dialysis rather than have a transplant. I think, you know, there's been a lot said lately about adequate dialysis versus optimal, and that's obviously where we're going, hopefully. Just a couple of things. I think there needs to be greater emphasis on educating PCPs. I'm appalled at what I see, the lack of knowledge of some of the PCPs around. And as far as Washington goes, I've been with another group that's with KCP in D.C. several times, and I guess I have more of a comment, emphasizing that they do want to hear your stories. They are, and not to be afraid, they're just people. And the big thing that we found was you need to really be prepared to tell your story and how you want to tell it and things like that. And I do understand from the other side that a lot of the provisions of the KCQEA were already passed and included in MIPA, so I can understand some of the emphasis on transplant. But my question would be is how do we get the PCPs in line, I guess, with the NEFs to really refer people in a timely manner, things like that. So I'll shut up.
Thanks, Denise. You raised two very, very good points. One being we recognize that dialysis is the preferred treatment option for many people. And we know people, we hear stories every day of people who are living long and living well while on dialysis. So that's a great point, and I'm glad that you raised that. Again, it's your choice. It was your husband's choice, and that's what we want to be able to provide, all the options so that people can make the choice that's best for them and their families. So we definitely recognize that and appreciate that comment. And in terms of the greater emphasis on educating primary care physicians, we hear you loud and clear, and we've actually been working on initiatives over the past few years to bring more education to the primary care physician community. It's a huge challenge, and we recognize it, so we're working in ways to provide that information to them, as well as talk to other specialty groups in the medical profession. We know that people who are endocrinologists, for instance, who are looking at people with diabetes, we want to be sure that they understand the connection with chronic kidney disease and diabetes. Same with doctors who are treating patients with heart conditions. We want to be sure that they have all the information that's necessary for them to understand the connection between cardiovascular disease and kidney disease. So we know it's a tall order, Denise, and we are working tirelessly to be sure that more in the medical community understands chronic kidney disease and the connections. And the way that we're going to do that, again, is stories like we're hearing on this call tonight, and it's people like you who are in the community who are saying, we need this, this is what we want, and it's necessary. So I appreciate your comment. Thank you very much. So who's our next caller?
Our next question comes from Paul Rodriguez. Your line is open.
Okay, hi. Good evening. How are you?
Hi, Paul.
Okay. Just wanted to say, first off, this was the best telephone conference call I have been on. I loved everyone on the panel. They had some very good stories to tell. Some very good stories.
So what's your story, Paul?
And mine is, I am a patient advocate here in Buffalo at our Comprehensive Dialysis Center in Williamsville. And I've been with dialysis now for about 3 years. And I'm also a volunteer with the National Kidney Foundation here in Western New York. And what I just wanted to say was a couple comments that, you know, we do need more volunteers out there to support the Kidney Foundation. We really do, because I tell you, every year we have walks and, you know, the golf tournaments, et cetera. And like I said, we just need more volunteers out there to get involved with the Kidney Foundation. Also, we can also use more patient advocates as well. Because to me, we don't have enough patient advocates in every unit. Okay, we have several units here in Western New York. Also, I love the idea that Maggie and Jane have brought up about getting the congressmen involved and letting them see what it's like to be on dialysis. And I love that idea. And I know we're doing that here in Western New York as well, getting our local politicians involved and, you know, let them know what it's like about to be on dialysis.
Thank you, Paul.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for your comments. We take those to heart and we appreciate it. I'm sure our Western New York affiliate is very happy to have a volunteer like you. And the best way for us to recruit other patient advocates is, guess what, through other patient advocates like you. So the more that you can get the word out and the more you can talk about your story, the more you will get people inspired and hopefully wanting to get more involved and do other things with the National Kidney Foundation or with other local organizations who are advocating for people with chronic kidney disease or for donors or transplant candidates and recipients. So we thank you for your comments. And who else is on the call?
Our next question or comment comes from Yvonne Vega. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Yvonne. Where are you calling from?
I'm actually calling from Northern California.
Okay.
I'm a transplant recipient, about a little over 14 years, successful, not one rejection episode ever. I absolutely have, I'll try to keep it short, a comment and then a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
My comment is on dialysis versus transplantation. I think it definitely depends on the individual's life and what is, you know, the age and lifestyle. For me, I was in my late 20s and I ended up on CAPD for almost 4 years and it was horrible. I mean, I hated being tied to it, and transplant was the better solution for me because I was so young and I like to travel and I like to go places and not be tied down to anything. And also, I felt so much better after I had my transplant. So I think a lot of it has to do with where you are in your health, how old you are, what is your lifestyle when it comes to transplant versus dialysis. That said, I have a big caveat in there. As I do get older, there might come a time where I might need to make that choice on dialysis versus transplantation. And I, too, would like to see more research done on you know, how to live with dialysis and still feel as good as you felt on transplantation, and also the energy level. I always had a problem with energy level on dialysis versus transplant. Energy means a lot to me. So that's just a comment. What I really want to hear from is, I have actually been at 5 different centers throughout California and the state of Washington because I move a lot for my job. And I have found that the clinic protocols vary quite a bit. And I found some excellent protocols. If I'm allowed to name them, let me know. I don't know if I am. Am I allowed to?
I don't think you have to. I think we get the point. So
okay.
Continue with the story.
Okay, so the point is that some of them are very good about letting you know when they want to hear from you if you're not feeling well, just in case, to get your blood taken in order to make sure that your kidney is not being, you know, compromised. And then I've just found recently a new transplant center that doesn't want to hear from me at all unless I am in the hospital. And I'm not kidding on this. They want me to go to my primary care physician at all times and go ahead and get my blood work at the emergency room, and if there's a problem, they'll come into play. So I just found that to be very disconcerting, and I want to know, what do you think about that? Have you seen that happen? And the other thing has to do with the immunosuppressant drugs. I found some insurances are now not allowing me, the insurance I have now is not allowing me to purchase a 90-day supply through mail order. It's now only 30 days. So that also seems to be kind of strange to me. So just your thoughts on those?
Thank you so much, Yvonne. We appreciate that.
Yvonne, this is Kathy Pagan. I work as one of the transplant service program directors here at the National Kidney Foundation. And you bring up a very good point. Different transplant centers have different protocols, different ways of doing things. And there can be tremendous variation in how they, what patients they accept for transplant. Some centers will do very high-risk patients. Other ones have a more narrow focus. And what drugs they use. Some transplant centers fairly soon after transplanted do discharge patients to a PCP. And there we really work with transplant recipients to be their best self-advocates in terms of demanding the treatment they need from the transplant center to coordinate care with their PCP when necessary, or finding a PCP that has access to a transplant specialist. It's very hard. Other transplant centers, I know some recipients like you, 15 or 16 years out, that still are in touch with their transplant centers. When somebody's looking for a transplant center, we say often interview a few or go talk to a few about having an evaluation or even be evaluated, because they're very, very different. And then, of course, like you said, your insurance may narrow down your choices tremendously to a, quote, center of excellence or somewhere they want you to go. This is a problem in our health care industry in general. There's certain things that aren't uniform, which we wish were, and at the same time, transplant at a certain point has an artistic element to it. There is a science, absolutely, but some of the surgeons and nephrologists have use their art, their just their knowledge of their profession, and take it in different directions. The best you can do is find a doctor that knows you, and that you have to know yourself and be able to speak up for yourself to get the care you need. We do have a Bill of Rights for transplant recipients, and part of that transplant recipient's Bill of Rights and Responsibilities is to give you permission and encouragement to access the care that you need that's sometimes so hard to get because it's so specialized.
Thank you, Kathy. And just to reiterate about your rights and responsibilities, everybody has the right. You have the right to quality care. You have the right to respect and personal dignity. You have a voice in the decision-making process. You have the right to information. And you have the responsibility to maintain your long-term health and to provide information to your health care providers. And I say those things to say you are absolutely well within your right to talk to them and demand that you get the best care possible. And you have to do that, and you have to feel empowered to do that, and you have to know that it makes a difference. It makes all the difference in the world for you to speak up for yourself. And it doesn't sound like you have that problem, Yvonne, but for others on the call, it can be a very intimidating process, and we recognize that, but you have to advocate for yourself first and foremost.
And I'll just add one more thing. It is National Kidney Month, March, and we are the Kidney Foundation, so we focus a lot on kidneys, especially since there's more kidney transplant and dialysis patients than other types of treatments for people with end-stage disease. However, lung, heart, liver patients, pancreas patients, other organ transplant patients are also a very important part of our community, and the lessons learned from kidney can be applied to them. We had a call from a lung recipient not too long ago, from Oregon, who could not find a lung transplant specialist to treat her. And we were able to hook her up with a kidney transplant specialist who knew enough about transplant to take on the needs that she had as a lung recipient. So if we have the other organs listening in on this call, know that you are important to us, and though you might hear the kidney a lot, we will also be here for you.
Thank you, Catherine. Thanks for reminding us. We're all part of the same community. For us, although we're the National Kidney Foundation, transplant is a huge part of our constituency, and we serve and provide information and resources and support to all transplant recipients. So who's our next caller?
Our next caller is Tom Falsey. Your line is open.
Hi, Tom. Yes. How are you? Thanks.
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good.
I don't really have a question. I just have more of a comment. To the people who are on the waiting list for kidneys or for any other organ for that matter, I would just encourage you to, you know, let people know of your situation. I am an anonymous kidney donor, and my wife is an anonymous kidney donor, and so is my brother. But none of us would be donors if we didn't know that there was a problem out there. I mean, share your story. You might be surprised. Somebody from your church or somebody that's sitting next to you on a bus or somebody who's never you've never met before may just offer you a kidney.
Thank you so much, Tom, for that comment. It's short and sweet and very powerful in terms of telling your story. We cannot emphasize enough how really impactful your story has on others and really on yourself as well. You know, it's a way to remind yourself about what's important, and it's a way for you to remind yourself that you're not in this alone. There are other people like you all around the country, and we're here to help you. So, any more questions?
Yes, our next question comes from Lori Wegerson. Your line is open.
Hi, my name is Lori Wegerson, and I'm an in-center hemodialysis patient since December of 2005 here in the Midwest.
Hi, Lori.
Hi. And also through travels of some Southern California hemodialysis clinics. Anyways, I had a couple questions. One was, I'm a little confused. What's the difference between the American Kidney Foundation and the National Kidney Foundation?
They're two separate
organizations.
Two different organizations. The National Kidney Foundation is us, and we've been around for 50 years. There's several kidney organizations out there.
Mm-hmm.
But for more information about us specifically and the programs that we do, I suggest there's so much information. I couldn't possibly begin to explain to you all the things we do. So I suggest you go take a look at our website and go poke around or give us a call and ask us some questions. And our website is www.kidney.org.
So one's not an umbrella of the other?
No.
Okay. All right. Just need clarification on that.
No worries.
The second question is, will transcripts be available of today's coffeehouse conversation?
As a matter of fact, Lori, we will have this call. It's being recorded.
Okay.
And it will be available on our website, www.kidney.org/coffeehouse.
Okay.
And you will be able to access the call, I believe, if not tomorrow, the day after. So relatively quickly, you'll be able to listen in on these on the call to get information that you may have missed or to refer back when you have questions and you remember that this was a subject that we covered on the call.
Okay.
And also, we will continue to have coffeehouse conversations specifically on advocacy activities. So
mm-hmm.
this is the first in what I believe will be many calls because we get comments and we get suggestions from people like you in the community all the time about issues, and we will be taking those into consideration as we continue to plan for future calls.
Okay, great. And my last question is, I am in strong concurrent with Yvonne's contribution and inquiry because I have found that no matter where I go, although it's always within the same corporate organization, you know, that is rendering the hemodialysis, there are really strong variances even in the way that the dialysis technician administers the dialysis. And an example is, you know,
hello?
According to the patient handbook, you know, we're supposed to work in collaboration with the dialysis technician and, you know, be communicative and, you know, work from, you know, your dry weight and your, you know, increased fluid gains from that and what do you, you know, guys want to negotiate as far as how much to remove and whatnot. And I can go somewhere else and that's not even you know, that's not solicited, and then it's actually, you know, they're not cooperative, and it is really disconcerting that within the same organization, you know, and again, I won't mention it, but it's very disconcerting that there's not congruency. You know, what I would really like to see NKF do, if they can have any kind of influence, is I use Walgreens as kind of like the analogy. You know, no matter what Walgreens I go into, I can expect, you know, the layout to be the same, you know, even though the store might be turned at a different angle. And, you know, where the hair care is always going to be and where toothpaste is always going to be, I would like to be able to have that kind of peace of mind and not have to always feel like I'm doing battle, no matter which dialysis facility I go to, as far as being able to expect a certain, you know,
Hello?
No, apologize. I will go ahead and reopen her line.
Lori, we lost you. Okay, until she comes back.
And Lori's line is reopened.
Hi, Lori?
Yes?
Hi, we lost your last part. But the last part of your comment.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
We heard up to the Walgreens analogy.
Oh, okay. Well,
and not feeling like you want, feeling like it can be very disheartening to do battle every step of the way when you go to different clinics.
Yeah, it seems like that every clinic is governed by a different kind of a corporate culture or management culture, even though it's the same organization. And that's really disconcerting because I'd like to be able to, for me and all the other patients, you know, to if you travel or if you have to relocate or whatever, that you can have that peace of mind of knowing that you can have that realistic quality of care expectation.
We hear you and we hear this story 1,000 times over, and we certainly understand. That's why it's important for everybody to feel like, I know you don't want to do battle, but you have to when it comes to your health. And until we get a system that is perfect, which is a long ways off, you've got to be vigilant and you've got to be willing. I know it's frustrating and I know it can be tiring, but there's also a process for you to state your grievances and other ways to be heard, really. And we can help you along with that if you give us a call and we can talk offline a little bit more. And also, our patient services director, Sheila Weiner, is on the call and may be able to add more to this. But the last series of Coffee House Conversations call was on the new government's new regulations for conditions for coverage of end-stage renal disease. And there's a lot of information, really dialysis facilities. And, Lori, if you go back, because those calls are already up on our website, you can go back and hear some more information that addresses some of your concerns. So I thank you for calling in, and I appreciate your comment.
Hi, this is Sheila Weiner, Patient Services Director. How are you? Well, thank you very much for your question and your concerns, and I want to let you know that we just completed a series of 4 calls about the dialysis conditions for coverage. So actually, there are brand new regulations that went into effect on October 14th, 2008, to help you be protected in the dialysis unit when you receive care. You are encouraged to be part of your healthcare team and really to be part of your care planning process. And your dialysis care team is required to speak with you and offer you the opportunity to be part of this care planning process. So I encourage you to speak with your dialysis care team about your concerns. And patient satisfaction is now more than ever on the radar screens of dialysis providers. They are required to assess patient satisfaction to ensure that they do receive adequate care and that they are satisfied with their care. So please don't hesitate to contact your dialysis care provider about your concerns to ensure that you're receiving quality, adequate care, and safe care and treatment. And Also, feel free to contact me at any time at the National Kidney Foundation. My name is Sheila Wiener. I'm the Patient Services Director, and thank you so much for your comments and questions.
Thank you, Sheila, and thank you, Lori, for your comments. We're running short on time, but hopefully we have time to get some more questions in. So who's our next question?
We have a question or comment from Andreas Price. Your line is open.
Hi,
hello.
Yes.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Good, good. Yeah, I just wanted to make a brief comment regarding the whole issue of advocacy. You know, I'm 29 years in now, as of yesterday, dealing with chronic renal disease and every treatment form that's out there. And one of the keys for me is twofold. It takes visibility and it takes voice. First of all, you have to speak to others. You have to sometimes even speak for others who are not in a position to speak for themselves. And then thirdly, you have to speak for yourself. And that's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you, Andreas. Actually, you have a story to tell that you might want to share. It might be encouraging to other people.
Okay. In these couple of minutes.
Just in these couple of minutes.
All right. Yeah, I was 15 years old when I was first diagnosed with end-stage renal disease. Began dialysis the day of my diagnosis. Spent 9 years on dialysis the first time around. Received a kidney transplant in 1989, which I maintained for 14 years. In 2003, I had to return to dialysis. Waited for a second kidney, which I received in July of this past year. I've never allowed my illness to slow me down, to stop me. Been an advocate for kidney disease and transplantation for several years. Served on the local board of the National Kidney Foundation here in Kentucky. Went to college, you know, finished college all while dealing with dialysis, and completed my master's degree just this past December. Spent 2.5 years on Next Stage, so I've experienced every treatment option that's out there and have just been very, very vocal and very involved in my own health care, and I think that's one of the keys to advocacy.
Thank you so much, Andreas, and thank
you
for sharing that. And that was a quick story that you were able to wrap that up, and we thank you for coming to Washington and being part of our People Like Us army of patients that we hope to continue to build around the country.
Oh, my pleasure.
Any more questions?
I show no questions or comments at this time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate everyone's input. I think this was a very helpful discussion. I've learned. I hope other people have learned. And more importantly, I hope you all feel empowered and you feel educated and you feel like you're ready to get involved. And so we ask that you, for more information about People Like Us and our advocacy initiative, we ask you to go to our website, which is www.nkfpeoplelikeus.org. For more information about our Take Action Network, you can get to that through the People Like Us website, but if you want to go to that separately, it's www.kidney.org/takeaction, and we will forward these website links to you and follow-up emails. But pretty much you can find any information from our main website, which is www.kidney.org. Also, we're available to answer your questions or to provide support or direction if you need us, and we can be reached at 1-800-622-9010. Again, we really appreciate you. I thank our panelists for tonight, and I really appreciate everyone's comments, suggestions, criticisms, and working together, we hope to continue to build our advocacy program. Thank you very much, and good night.
This concludes today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.